Hello, everyone. On today's episode, we are going to be talking about managing uncertainty and inflation through the tools that we have available to us. Over the last couple of weeks, we talked about that glide path to retirement. And then last week, we talked about salary negotiation and making sure that you're capitalizing on your biggest earning potential, your salary. Now, in last week's episode, we talked about that fork in the road. Do you want to crush it in your current industry, or the other side, I got to get out, I want to try something new, breaking into a new industry? Today, we're going to be following up with the host of the Salesforce for Everyone podcast, talking about the process of breaking into a completely new industry. Welcome to the Ultimate Crowdsource Personal Finance Show. This is Choose FI.
You're listening to Choose FI Radio. The blueprint for financial independence lives here. If you're looking to unlock the secrets to financial independence and early retirement, you're in the right place. Stay tuned and join a community of like-minded people who are getting off the hamster wheel and taking control of their lives in the pursuit of financial independence. Choose FI, your home for financial independence online.
All right, guys, very excited to dive into this week's episode. And to help me with this, I have my co-host Brad here with me today. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, Jonathan, I'm doing quite well. And yeah, so you mentioned the hosts of the Salesforce for Everyone podcast. And actually, these are two familiar faces here on Choose FI. So we interviewed Bradley Rice for the first time way back when in episode 117. And then we had him back on in episode 297 with Anita. And we heard her story. She's a listener who transitioned her career in the middle of the pandemic and took a job in a brand new industry, making a significant salary. And to me, this is the holy grail. This is what we've been looking for the years of our podcast. And Jonathan, it ties in so perfectly with these last couple episodes, right? How can people, we think of FI as a superpower. We think of it as, how can we learn the rules to the game and use them to our best benefit? And that's what I've seen personally with what they're up to with Salesforce and Talent Stacker. So with that, Bradley and Anita, welcome back to Choose FI.
Yeah, thanks for having us on. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, same. This is great. It's really funny. You guys are tracking me from the start of my career and watching me grow into this.
That is incredible. I remember transitioning from hospitality into this industry, and you've really become a superstar in the Salesforce admin space just because not only your engagement with the community at large, but I know the firm that you're working with is absolutely just loving, you know, what you're producing, which is so incredible in the context of being relatively new to the career track. One of the reasons that we wanted to circle back to this conversation, Bradley, I'll start with you. Like, let's go back. Episode 117. We have always been blown away by the financial independence community and the types of people that stumble onto this content and embrace it. It's one of the things that's so attractive. And this is something we said early on. It's not just the people that are producing content. It's what the people that are consuming and taking action on that content, what they're actually doing. And so I had the privilege of meeting you for the first time at a campfire down in Florida. And just what you were actually doing blew our minds. We stayed in touch. And then in episode 117 of our podcast, you came on the show and you told us, and I believe this is actually a talk you gave at Camp Fi as well, how you had made the choice based on your values, based on what the financial independence ethos is all about, to cut your hours, you know, and as a result, you actually ended up making more. So I want to just give it back to you. If you could go back in time a little bit and set that frame up, how did financial independence, just the ethos of that, really allow you to make an unorthodox choice and get radical results?
Yeah, it's a really good point. And it does go way back, because I think episode 117 had to be about 4 years ago now. And when we first met at Camp Fi, that had to be probably about 5 years ago now. So it's not like this is a new thing that we're stumbling across. In fact, it's really the opposite of that. You know, Salesforce has been around since about 2000. And so we're looking at 20 plus years now that this thing has just been on a massive upward trajectory. So, you know, going back to the episode 117 of the Choose FI podcast that I was initially on, you know, we were talking about how I had taken really my life and used a Salesforce career to sort of check the box for the income side of that equation. So I don't look at Salesforce as my life or my career as my life. I look at it as filling the gap for how am I going to make money and upskill and be able to do things like you guys are talking about, combating inflation. So yeah, at that point I was working about 20 to 25 hours a week, making just over $200,000. And that was back in 2018. And things have just gotten—
Which, to be clear, that was, I just want to point this out, that was what you cut down to. So you were making less, working more. You made the choice to cut your— we need to really get into the weeds there just for a minute. But like, how does someone work less in the same career and then end up making more? Maybe they didn't even realize that was possible.
Yeah, it comes from that position of strength that a financial independence journey gives you, right? Because when I quit my day job to start working part-time, I was making about $110,000 working full-time at a consulting firm. Great job. And because of financial independence, I was saving 50% of my income and I was in a position to take the part-time job. I never truly intended to go double my income working half as much. The intention was that my daughter was being born and I wanted to spend more time with her. And I was willing to take a massive pay cut in order to spend more time with her. And financial independence had awarded me that. But what ended up happening was I quit my day job. I found a part-time job at a local company. And it turned out that because of my expertise, because of the skills I had, I could do that part-time job instead of 20 hours a week. I could do it in 10 hours a week, which allowed me to pick up another client and do another part-time job and still fit all of that into 20 hours a week. And eventually what ended up happening is I got a few clients on the side. They were what we call managed services agreements. So I do a few hours a week for a handful of different clients. And lo and behold, you end up, you know, I'm happy to go through the math, but you end up making over $200,000 working, you know, 20 hours a week. It's the craziest thing.
Yeah, that is amazing. So, I mean, you in essence turned into a freelancer, but a freelance business owner. And I love that it all starts from that position of power and from your why, right? I mean, that is why we're pursuing the financial independence in the first place, is there has to be something bigger. We're not running away from something that we hate. We're running towards something. In your case, your daughter was being born. And like you just said, you were willing to take a massive pay cut. But the beautiful thing is you didn't have to. That's amazing. And I've always been struck by you, even way back when on episode 117, about your story of upskilling. And I'd love if you could refresh my memory and the audience's memory of how you did this. Like, I think it was like during your lunch breaks or something. You were taking all these different certifications and learning. I don't have the greatest memory in the world, Bradley, but like that sticks out to me from our 600 episodes. And I'd love for you to refresh.
Yeah, so it was a lot of things, and it's become more commonplace, I'll say, in the Salesforce world to go upskill and get additional certifications and get these niche sort of skills in order to market yourself. But a lot of that has come from conversations like this and educating people about the possibility and not just working full-time jobs, but leveraging your skills to really level up your career. And I don't really care if that's Salesforce or not, like that can be applied to other industries as well. But yeah, back then it was, you know, really a matter of, it was, some of it was Salesforce technical skills, but a lot of it was soft skills. And that's what we're still finding today. A lot of it was, man, starting my own business sounds overwhelming. That's not my trigger to give up or wait a week. That's my trigger to lean into it. And you guys have talked a lot about that. I mean, I got a lot of my soft skills from listening to Choosify and sort of the understanding of these concepts of, let's lean into discomfort. If you feel uncomfortable about something, that probably means you need to overcome it and figure it out. And it was just a lot of that iterated over different topics. It was, how do you start an LLC? What does a profit loss statement look like? How do you negotiate with clients and get them to understand your value? And instead of walking away from those ideas because it's hard and you can't really watch a YouTube video about how to get a lot of those things done, you just have to iterate over it and figure it out for yourself. But I felt comfortable with that. Again, coming from a position of strength, that was, what do I have to lose? I take a part-time job, I try to figure things out. And if it all falls apart, then I have to work a full-time job like everybody else. But if it doesn't all fall apart, then I've got something really incredible in front of me.
I love this, man. And, you know, Anita, one of the reasons I'm so happy on your call is that you're on this call is that you broke through and you made this choice from a period of radical uncertainty. And there's so many just big themes here. You landed a job in a completely new industry, you had no background in it, well under 6 months, doubling your salary, making over $100,000 a year, I believe. Now, what I really want to get across to this is like the reason that it was forced on you, this approach that you took this chance on it, was that your comfort zone got very, very uncomfortable. Your entire industry got punched in the face. So you're working in hospitality, March of 2020, we go through this pandemic, the industry is just mass letting people go. And so you're looking around and you're like, well, I'm going to try this. Now, if I can add one or two more threads, because I really want you to walk through this journey with us, the thought, you know, Bradley had this conversation with me and Brad, and he told us what he was actually doing. I was trying to explore this concept of talent stacking and this concept of like, what does it look like to build skills? We talked about it theoretically, Brad and I, we've been kind of searching around, trying to figure out what would a framework for this actually look like. And then you just kind of laid it out. And I said, Bradley, this is what people want. They're not interested in getting a certification or a degree. What people want when they make the choice to go to college, what people want when they make the choice to make any sort of decision like this, they want to land a job. They want to land a career. That's the goal. And for the last like 20 some odd, maybe 30, 40 years, a degree is equivalent, at least in our minds, to a great career. And then what's happened slowly is we've seen the debt burden just increase from maybe a modest $3,000 for a college degree for 10, 15, 20. And now the average student loan debt burden or the cost of college is around $100,000, while the average wages for that same graduate year one is close to $50,000 or less. So this is like the paradigm that's sitting on my shoulders. It's making, there is a better way. I know people that are doing this. Bradley has just mapped it out. And Bradley came and shared on this podcast what it would look like. And then you stepped up and said, I'll give it a shot. And you did it in the worst possible time, right? And theoretically, what people would have in mind is the worst possible time. And then in episode 297, chooseify.com/297, we were able to jointly celebrate that it worked. Now, I want you to, I set all that up to give it back to you. You're in hospitality and the ground starts shaking all around you. Like, walk us through that decision tree and what you experienced over those intervening months.
Yeah. So I was a revenue manager for a big box hotel, which is a fancy name for just like a really big hotel that was actually connected to the convention center. So our business is mostly group business, and obviously pandemic was not good for business. So I was the one in particular who did the forecasting. And so I got all the calls from the event managers, the general manager, that all these groups are canceling. I could definitely see the writing on the wall. Finally, March of 2020 is when they furloughed majority of us. And we didn't know what was going on until October is when a lot of us got laid off. But during that time period, I was just scrambling to upskill, did not have an interest in going back to college and paying for more tuition. So I went to a lot of the free courses, initially like Udemy, Lynda, Coursera, all that stuff. But then I stumbled upon ChooseFI. I binged like every episode you guys made, found Bradley's episode. I was like, maybe I'll give this a shot. He sounds like a normal dude. I think if he can do it, I can too. Ended up joining the Talent Stacker program and did really well. Passed the exam first try. I think from when I joined to job landed was about 4 months. So that was January 2021. I spoke to you guys around, I think, March or February that year. I am still with the same consultancy, and I actually just negotiated a pretty sweet salary raise.
Okay. A lot to dive into there. But since I set up the contrast and you actually, because what you just said, the logic that you just went through is what everybody faces. My current job is going away. My choices are go back to college or something else. And I don't know what something else looks like. I have no idea. That is the wild, wild west. College, at least I don't have to think about it for 3 to 4 years. Then at the end of the 4 years and after the 50 plus K of, you know, whatever, now it's like, all right, well, will someone give me a job? And now I'm thinking about updating my resume again and realizing I still don't have any experience. But that being said, like, you could have made that choice, but you're saying, let's look at the wild, wild west. So in your opinion, looking back, are you the exception to the rule? Was Bradley the exception to the rule? Could someone do this? Like, you, could you have done this without a college degree? Is this even possible for someone that has not gotten the associates, has not gotten the bachelor's, you know, has not gotten the GED potentially? You know, is this possible?
Yeah, I can confidently say it is, because we've seen it happen over and over again. Early on, I don't know if you listen back, I probably said, oh, I was lucky a lot of times. And I was saying that for a while, but then I'm like, no, because it's not luck. More and more people, like, they repeat the steps, they go through the program, and they're able to land a job again and again. So definitely not an exception.
So we said the program, but I want to like nip that in the bud for a second. I want to talk again, because this was all about the philosophy. It was all about the framework. And I tell Bradley, you could do this in any industry. Like, what we're talking about here, the underpinnings of this is a way that you can erase the need for college and you can move into near indie industry where it involves upskilling. Bradley, that is a bold statement, and it's one that I made 4 years ago before we could prove it out. And you kind of were like a little nervous about it. I remember you were like, I don't know, Jonathan, I don't know. But like now I see the confidence on your face about that. And am I right? Was I right 4 years ago? And are we right to have this conversation now and say, you can do this?
Yeah, 100%, right? And you're absolutely right. A year ago, I don't think I had the data to back it. Like I didn't have the experience to back it. I couldn't say, you know what, 100% sure, because I think for me, there's a lot of things that sound logical and they sound right. And when you explain it, and it's kind of like, yeah, that makes sense. I think that sounds right. But then when you really see the data, and I don't mean like a person's experience here and there, I mean hundreds and thousands of just sample cases where you go, wow, like this is no longer the exception to the rule. This is becoming the rule. And in fact, we're finding very little data to support that the college degree is making a measurable difference, right? So it's actually the contrary is starting to be proven that, wait a second, there are all these certifications, and there have been for years. I mean, we're even talking like firefighters, for example, or nurses, for example, have different types of certifications and licensures that they can get that are not related to college. It's just that college has almost created a gateway to say, oh, you want to be one of these? Well, you have to get a degree in order to do that. They've gotten in between the career and the person. And so I think Salesforce erupted so quickly going from 1999 being founded to 2020 being worth over $200 billion. I think it erupted so quickly that sort of the college wheel didn't have time to get in between it. And you created the space, and I think this has happened in a lot of other spaces to your point, but you created the space where, oh, all of a sudden there's not a master's of Salesforce degree. And it turns out you can just get the training online for the technical skills and you can bring the soft skills with you. And all of a sudden you find yourself making double, triple as much as your average college graduate with no degree. I think it's exceptional. And I think you were hitting the nail on the head back then. And even more so today, I think everyone's starting to see like, ooh, we're on the forefront of something here.
Bradley, you've mentioned soft skills a couple of times. And I'm curious if you could dive a little more into that in terms of what you see people succeeding with. Is there a type of person with a certain background? What are those soft skills? Like, you know, you've mentioned a couple of times that the technical skills you can learn it, and we'll dive a little more into that. But I'd love to hear about the soft skills, because I think people still conflate, okay, I'm going to college to learn X, Y, and Z, and it's not just in the classroom, but I'm picking up all these other things, right? I'd love to hear your response to that.
So yeah, this was one of the major misconceptions I had when we even started Talent Stacker. I thought we got to teach people all these technical skills. That's what's going to get them these jobs, because these are tech jobs. We teach them tech skills and then they land tech jobs. Once again, that's logical thinking that is not data driven, right? We don't have evidence that that's true, but it sounds right. So let's do that. And then we learn over time, holy smokes, the people that are really exceeding quickly, the people who are not taking 6 months to transition into these careers, it's taken 3 or 4 months. What makes them different? And then we look at people like Anita coming from hospitality backgrounds. We look at people like Brandon Van Gouder coming from K-12 education. Actually, he was an elementary school PE teacher. We look at people coming from healthcare backgrounds, especially those that are working directly with patients. And what do we find out about these people? Are they technical savants? Not really. But what they have are those incredible people skills. And so we talk about soft skills, and it's things like patience, to actually listen to someone and not jump to conclusions and not correct them immediately. It's the ability to have all of your priorities change today. You walked into work at 8 o'clock and you thought, this is what I'm working on today, I'm ready. And then you sit down at an 8:30 meeting and everything changes for the rest of the day. And instead of just blowing up and venting and you can't handle it or adjust, you're used to that. You're comfortable with that. That's something you can deal with. And we see that a lot coming from these professions that deal with people consistently. So I'll say that's what we've seen. But I think most people have these skills. It's just realizing that they're valuable and highlighting them and finding them and saying, don't worry about the next certification. Skip all that. Let's focus on how you communicate with other people.
Right. So this is critical. And so we just laid them out. We have soft skills, and we have technical skills. Now, technical skills, could be very niche specific, right? I have a Microsoft certification. I have a Google certification. I have a Salesforce certification. I have a whatever, dynamic blah, 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 certification. All right, that's great. And that's very focused. Soft skills are universal. And the great news is it can be taught. The past paradigm, the old paradigm, and I saw this and we see this a lot. So he who has the most certifications wins. And so you'd have these certification busters where you get this list and you say, I have 4,000 certifications or I have 4,000 degrees, right? It's the same problem, but can you do anything? What can you do for us? And even in the context of like, there's soft skills when you're in the job, which are going to help you to get that next raise, to transfer, to continue to move up, you know, in your profession. But Anita, my question to you would be, what soft skills are you seeing before you get the job? You know, having patience when you sit down in the first boardroom meeting and you've already there. Now, that's going to come into play when they're thinking about, you know, how do they want to grow you as, you know, an employee or as a person working in this role. But on the outside looking in, what in your mind were the biggest soft skills that you recognize are needed? And then also you realize can be quickly and effectively in a matter of weeks or a month be taught?
Honestly, like being able to have small talk and hold a conversation is like your initial in. I mean, if the interview is going well and it's more of a conversation, like this person's like, oh, I can see myself working with them. They're pretty like amenable. They're easy to work with, easy to speak to. This isn't going to be a problem. Going in, other soft skills, just like, I guess, just normal stuff like sending up follow-up emails, just it's hard to explain because it's kind of like a lot of common sense to me. So I have trouble pointing them out. But honestly, it's just being able to like actively listen and being able to just shut up and listen.
That's great. I'm gonna focus that advice, Lucas. I know you have more and I know you guys like I just want people to imagine this. When you have seen over 1,000 people go through the process and land jobs, you start to identify common patterns. And those that succeed, especially when they're sharing what worked, what didn't, all you start to see, okay, this is not only the road less traveled, but this is the 80-20 of this process. And so, you know, Bradley, giving this back to you, would you consider these soft skills or technical skills or something else? And I'm thinking about the process of personal branding, the process of building a resume, the process of getting experience, the process of, you know, searching for jobs, the process, you know, these types of things, where do they fall into this framework for quickly transitioning into a new industry?
Yeah, to me, those are leaning towards the soft skill, right? Because that has nothing to do with a specific expertise in any specific area. You can do personal branding or networking or interview prep in any industry. I think it's about having that growth mindset. It's about thinking about things in terms of, I see something I'm uncomfortable with, I see a problem, and instead of focusing on the problem or the discomfort, you're focusing on getting comfortable or the solution. And I think that's the mindset. If you can switch your mind and reframe problems, and instead of saying, we have a big problem here, saying, we have a solution we need to find here, or this is something that makes me horribly uncomfortable and nervous and anxious, and refocus on, how can I get more comfortable in these situations? That is what is making people, in my mind, wildly successful, because we do see people looking to transition careers and they're uncomfortable. And early on, if they latch onto that negativity, it can be very difficult to win them back, right? Because they're latching onto the, I can't do this. I'm too old. I'm too young. I don't live in the right area. There's something wrong. Like if they latch onto that, we could have a problem, right? But if we lean into finding the solution early on, the positive aspects of these things, rapidly, we see that change. It's like, man, I'm not understanding Salesforce. I'm not looking to gripe. I want to figure out what other people have done before me that overcame this. And that's where we see people really succeed, is when they're focused more on overcoming than venting and ranting and leaning into their discomforts.
Yeah, I like this. So to me, it's this combination of all the things that both Bradley and Anita are talking about here, right? So I think, Anita, you're saying likability and communication. I mean, those are really important things. Being able to communicate both up and down the chain in your company is really, really important. Solving problems, like Bradley's saying, having that growth mindset, being on time, responding, doing all your work. Like, I know it sounds almost like table stakes, but really it puts you so far ahead of everybody else. And this obviously transcends Salesforce and what we're talking specifically about here. This is applicable to every single person listening to this podcast. If you can do that, if you can just do what you would normally think are table stakes and look to solve problems, like Bradley's saying, think about that growth mindset, upskill, you're going to be ahead not just of 95% of people, you're going to be ahead of 99% of people. So this was such an important, I hate to call it a sidebar conversation because it's not, this is the critical. It's like the saying, the little things are the big things. This really matters. It truly matters.
Hey, this is Andrew from the Chooseify team. Hope you're enjoying the show. We're going to get right back to it after these quick messages.
I do want to go back, Anita, to something you said, and it was so in passing that I don't want to let it slip by. You said something about negotiating a new salary, and that's something we have talked about so many times here on Chooseify, right? We had Tori Dunlap and Financial Mechanic on to give us specific scripts to talk about this. And I'd love to hear, did you get any influence from them, or was this something that you've always been good at, or talk me through? Because this was a big hole for me that I was scared to do. I was not good at personally.
I mean, no, negotiating, asking for a salary is not natural for me. In fact, for most women, it's not natural. I think prior to my career, the only person who ever pushed me to ask for a raise were my male coworkers. They're always like, you know, ask for more money, ask for a raise. It wasn't until Tori's episode, Tori Dunlap, she changed the game. I've actually taken like all her courses, and especially her negotiation course, and it's been life-changing, really helpful. So for my recent raise, because I work for a smaller company, it's more of a boutique consultancy. They don't have like the standard, you know, percent raise every year on your anniversary or something like that. So I had to like actually approach my boss and ask for a raise. I waited until I was in a position of strength. We had just signed a 6-month contract with a new client. So I waited till then to ask for it. And initially when I asked, he came back with something that was really underwhelming, and it was like as a percentage. So it was very corporate. I don't have a good poker face or poker voice. So like you could hear it in my voice that I wasn't very excited about it. So I asked for more, and he didn't instantly say no. He like came back a week later and offered me a 20K raise.
Wow. That's incredible. Good for you.
Thank you.
It's wild. You know, I went back while we were recording here and back into my old emails, and I found an email from you from September of 2020 where you were working for a hotel and you just responded to my 5-weekly email, and you're talking about different tips in hotels. And now to think about what has happened in the intervening, this is less than 2 years, right? It's 20 months. The pandemic hits, the world is coming to an end, certainly for the hospitality industry. Obviously, this is a horrific thing just in general. And you upskilled to go into a completely different career. And now talk us through like your career arc once you started with Salesforce.
Yeah, I think I'm like a year and a half in now, which is crazy. And like, I guess maybe it might be kind of long to stay in one spot in the tech world. It seems like everyone is switching companies like after a year or even less. The industry is so insane with the market. Really, it's like a, not a buyer's market, but like an employee market. You can really choose where you go. But I mean, I'm choosing to stay because based on my current skills, which is not a lot of technical skills, I think even my new role, like I'm not even doing any like the configuration or the technical stuff in Salesforce. I mean, I know about it, but my new role, like it's mostly soft skills. I'm a scrum master. And if you're not familiar with that, it's someone who facilitates meetings, which is crazy that this is even a job. I never knew it existed. And I looked at the salaries and they're comparable. I'm just like, where are all these like soft skill, non-tech jobs in the tech industry? Like, how come no one told me about this before?
All right. So you guys got to let me wrangle this one back here. There's so much. So people think that, you know, he or she who has the most technical skills wins. And the people that believe that ignore or do not put enough emphasis on the soft skills. And those that do blend enough, even if it's just an entry level, but very quickly realize that all of their momentum, all of their growth is going to come from a desire for lifelong learning plus soft skills. Whatever progress you make, it's your ability to tell a story around what you're learning. I want to prove this out. We pick a niche, any niche. All right. I'm not even going to say the word Salesforce in this context. It doesn't matter. You pick a niche, and we need probably in the niche, we need to show at some level that we can do XYZ thing. And if there's a certification involved, we should probably get something, but not for the, you know, the whole idea of learning the knowledge is separate. We want to know things to know them, to be good at what we do. The certification is a nod on a sheet of paper that you might be able to do what you say you're going to do, right? So how do you go about that? We can break these down, Bradley. I would say first and foremost, what I would do is find a group on social where people are excited about the thing, whether it be the certification, the industry. I would immerse myself in the culture. I'm going to guide through these steps, but I want to give you a second to comment on each one of these as I proceed through them.
Yeah. So I think one thing that you bring up is community, right? And I think everyone listening to this podcast right now understands the importance of community. And if they don't, then they should, because, you know, early on for me, it was getting into the Chooseify Facebook group and getting into the Mustachian forums, and just being involved in those communities is what allows you to not feel alone. And it's what allows you to learn from other people. It's like trying to learn something on your own versus reading a book about the topic. You can learn from the growth and success of everyone else who has already done it. And so to me, if I'm doing financial independence, for example, on my own, and I'm trying to increase my savings rate and understand these topics about, you know, backdoor Roth IRAs, and if I'm a contractor, a solo 401k, and how that's different, and all these topics that can sound so, you know, different language, totally different thing that I'm used to understanding, it can be almost overwhelming to the point where you just give up on it because it sounds like too much. But if you have a community around you to explain these concepts, it makes everything so much easier, especially if you can go to a in-person meetup and, you know, talk to other people who in real life in your community are going through these same experiences. It's a massive difference. And so I would say, you know, for anything you're doing, try to find those online communities, try to find those local meetups. I don't care if it's Salesforce or Google Analytics, or if you're a traveling nurse or whatever else, just find your community so that you can engage with other people, you can vent, you can learn, and you can better understand what you're up against.
Now, this is great. And in the context of venting, if your mission is to immerse yourself in, you know, to eventually have a profession here, be cognizant that this, especially in the context of a hobby, you know, or whatever, then be whatever you want to be. Maybe follow online best practices, right? But in the context of like a profession that you're in, keep that in mind, because you're in a group. You could lurk, just lurk, always read, never post. You're going to minimize your overall benefit. Yes, you might still find out about the best ways to get a certification. Yes, you might find out about cool tips and tricks that are happening, but you're not moving into the next layer, which is actually proactively starting to build out the next layer of this, which is your personal branding. When you make a post on LinkedIn, you make a post on a Facebook group, in some way, you are starting to create your own personal brand. And I think about people that anybody that's in our Facebook group, the Financial Independence Facebook group, knows about, like Frank. Frank posts radically on all the posts, and he's an incredibly knowledgeable person, right? An absolute authority. And he has a personal brand that was built on social. Now, Frank didn't have a business on the other end, but there's other individuals that have built financial consulting practices, and not by overtly spammy, but by just by adding tremendous value. And over time, you're building your personal brand. So you can be aggressive with this and do it in a very strategic way, but you can also just recognize the value of building up a personal brand and having people know that you are an authority or attempting to become an authority and generally a pleasant person in the niche that you're interested in. You can get very targeted around this, but what I want to, there's something I'm going to keep adding here, and it's a power of story. A story has a beginning, a middle, and an end. Your personal story is your transformation from being on the outside of the industry to the industry. Along the way, there were a bunch of obstacles that you had to work through, a bunch of skills that you had to aggregate. If you keep that in mind, as soon as we move to the, you know, what's happening here, what is getting added to your personal story? I think about Bradley on this call and Anita on this call talking about their personal story, how compelling that is to us on the outside, how compelling that is to an employer, because they realize what it is they're building, the skill stack that they're actually building. So when you're on social and you're making these different posts, whatever you've learned should quickly become part of your potential story. And Nita said small talk as a soft skill early on. What fills up small talk? Well, it's probably going to be relevant information based on a story that you put together, based on an experience that you had. First and foremost, probably starting with some sort of like input in some sort of social media group. Just, I don't want people to lose that, because this is what translate. I'm trying to take the word soft and take it from something that's opacity is nearly to zero and move it up so you can visualize soft. It's a real thing. It's a real, tangible skill that can be repeated in any industry. And so, Bradley, like, you can agree with that. But as we transition to this concept of personal branding, how can we take general, non-specific, you know, Facebook groups or maybe specific groups and start leveraging that and turning it into our ability to build out our personal branding, both from like a LinkedIn perspective and a resume perspective?
Yeah, I think that's what people overlook fairly often. And they hear words like personal branding and networking. And those are relatively vague. It's like, okay, cool. Now what do I do? How do I network? And I think a lot of people, even myself included, you know, I used to think of networking and I would think, okay, it's a conference. I'm probably wearing a suit or a really nice outfit. And I've definitely got business cards and I'm handing these things out and that's networking. And I'm shaking hands and I'm giving my 60-second pitch and I'm handing out business cards. That's not what networking is. I don't think networking has been that in the last 10 years. At least, is that a version? Absolutely. But that's probably a 10% version. 90% of networking and branding that is happening today in what I would refer to as the modern job market is on social. And so we have a lot of people who talk to us and they're like, I'm just not a social media person, you know, and it's like, that's okay. That's what I would refer to as something that makes you uncomfortable or a challenge. And we need to lean into that discomfort. Another example, but LinkedIn is a professional social media platform. Like if you're not on LinkedIn today and you're just going to say Indeed.com and you see a job that looks good and you apply for it and you submit your resume,
your employer is going to check out your LinkedIn profile.
Exactly. That is going to be their first step. If they somehow stumble across your resume in that stack of 500 resumes, the first thing they're going to do is look up your name on LinkedIn. And if they don't find you, they're probably just going to go to the next resume. And people go, why? Why on earth would they do that? Because a resume is a sheet of paper that has words and bullet points about who you are. A social media platform brings you to life. I can see what you post about. I can see how you interact with other people's posts. I can see the types of comments that you leave, the insights that you have. I can see so much about you. And that is never there for a resume. I can see, do you post weekly? Do you post monthly? Do you actually engage with people or do you just say, thanks, that was a cool thought? Like, what do you do? What do you bring to the table? What are your skills? And those soft skills come to light. Like we said, like networking, and I think this is part of Anita's story and so many others, it's you comment on a post and all of a sudden somebody's private messaging you about a job interview. Or you make a post and somebody thought that was insightful and they go, you know, we didn't really have a job available, but I've seen you interacting on LinkedIn lately. And I think we might have a role for you that we could create. And it sounds like an isolated experience. We've done the math on it. 30% of the entry-level jobs landed are through what we call the hidden job market. And that's people interacting on platforms like LinkedIn. And it makes all the difference. Resumes, that was the advice 20, 30, 40 years ago. Have a really good resume. Things have changed in the last 40 years.
So you really set us up perfectly here. I mean, we were covering a couple of things and we just covered personal branding and we just talked about, might be the title for the episode, the hidden job market. And Anita, like, is this accurate?
Yeah, I was one of those statistics. Like, that is how I got my job. I didn't even comment on it. So a mutual friend, this recruiter, Christopher Hopper, he's great, by the way, he had posted something about a Salesforce career fair. My now current boss at the time commented, it's like, oh, I wish I knew about this. Otherwise, like, I would have gone because we're hiring, and posted the links to the jobs. I clicked on it. I was like, oh, I'm way too underqualified. They like want someone with 5 years experience. Let me just like his comment. So like it brings it up and other people see it. But just because of that like, he looked at my LinkedIn profile and then set up an interview with me. And a couple of days later, I had an offer.
So you could go through the application profile, or you could just like a comment to a listing. You know, how many people have dropped 500 applications, they fill them all out and they're so frustrated by their lack of response. You liked a comment. And I just want to clarify, Bradley, I see you nodding. That is not the only time that's happened.
It's because this is a very underserved area of social media, right? Like if you go to LinkedIn and you just finished up on Instagram, Twitter, or TikTok, you're going to get to LinkedIn and be like, I am instantly bored. Like, this is so lame and dry. And like, these people are talking about work and like, I don't want to talk about this. Cool. Like, that is the immediate response because they're talking about work and they're talking about skills and certifications and job openings. And it's like, man, I just want to see like how cool this place in the middle of the whatever out in these mountains look like. I want to go see that instead because that's more exciting for my brain to look at. But if you spend time, and I tell people, let's say you're on three social media platforms, we'll go back to like TikTok, Instagram, Twitter, delete one of those apps off your phone and install the LinkedIn app. Delete your least favorite one, install the LinkedIn app. Now spend just as much time on that LinkedIn app as you were spending on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram. And all of a sudden, this is what you're seeing. This is what you're surrounding yourself with. It's a lot about environmental design and how you're exposing yourself to these topics and these conversations. And all of a sudden, you find yourself engaging in these topics and these conversations. And you find yourself being someone like Anita, who is liking a post here and there and commenting here and there and posting here and there. All of a sudden, you like the right comment or you post and the right person sees it, and it makes all the difference.
So Bradley, we're talking about soft skills and ultimately knowing the rules of the game. I think that's reading between the lines, because I understand that person who says, oh, I don't like social media. I intuitively understand that, right? I don't want to share my every inner thought and every picture I've ever taken on social media. I think that's where people, it starts and stops for most people. But what you're saying is, okay, that's fine. That's all well and good in your real life. But you have to understand, in order to get a job, LinkedIn is a really critical tool. So that's the soft skill is, okay, you have to understand first, that's the rule of the game. And then understanding that ecosystem. And frankly, I know essentially nothing about LinkedIn. I'm sure I have a profile. I connect every so often with people. But can either or both of you guys jump in with maybe just like one or two quick hit tips for how to get started with LinkedIn? Because to me, it's like this black box, ultimately.
Yeah. And like, as an introvert, I'm so happy LinkedIn exists because I don't know if I could have handled myself if I had to go to like in-person events and actually network. I would be that person like by the food or the drinks, like super awkward. But LinkedIn makes it easy for introverts, you know, post anything. I mean, what I see gets a lot of traction are wins. Like, people love celebrating other people, especially in the Salesforce ecosystem. So you do a super badge or you get your certification, just post that and like you get tons of likes and congratulations comments. But I mean, other stuff like stories, again, stories are a big hit, like sharing your journey or even sharing something you learned that day. It's really easy. Anything you can think of, just, you know, post it, see how it does. If it doesn't do well, move on to something else. Like, it's just very easy to experiment on LinkedIn with your posts.
So Anita, you know, this is very targeted here as we kind of build through these. People heard some of them, but just, you know, the idea of getting that certification and the process of maybe joining a group that is excited about that idea and also maybe can give you some best practices on getting certified. It could take you 4 years to get certified. It could take you 2 months to get certified. You know, the optimized is somewhere in between where you actually get certified and that certification is backed up by a little bit of knowledge and like a path to go forward, right? So that whole process, what does that look like to find the community? And then, you know, the next layer, personal branding. And then there's some aspect here of finding this hidden job market, but like order of operations, you know, your boss, Chris, finds you and because you liked his post and you get to the interview and he says, what have you done? And then you realize you have no experience outside of liking post is probably going to be a slight misfire. You know, when we get to interview in a second here, that's going to come up. So talk to us about experience, whether it's paid, whether it's volunteer, whether it's not even volunteer, but it's just interest-led experience that you're doing on your own. What's the intersection of those and like the mindset? And I think both of you probably have something to say about this. What is your perspective on the importance of experience over maybe like 45 certifications?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's just like when you go to college, you get a degree that doesn't guarantee you a job. And people are like, oh, you don't have an experience. But sometimes they're like, oh, let me just give you a shot. But that isn't the case most of the time. You need to show like you can actually do it. You just didn't study. So for me personally, I did volunteer on a project and I also like work on kind of a case study version. So it's not even for like a real company, just a case study to show that I can actually do what I learned. And on my interview, I just screen shared and showed like what I did. So he has visual proof that I can do these things.
Right. People think someone needs to give them permission to get experience. They think it has to be paid. Or if they can't get paid, they're like, well, you know, do I want to volunteer? This is time that I'm not going to get paid. Maybe I don't want to do volunteer experience, you know, which Bradley, I'll let you speak to that. But I'd like a little room after you finish talking about like the role of volunteer experience. Is it enough? Does it work? I want to talk a little bit about just interest-led learning when paired with story. So Bradley, thoughts on, you know, someone that's like, well, is volunteer experience, should I take 2 years and volunteer my time to then get the job? Like, what should they be trying to get out of a volunteer role?
Yeah, so it's a really good question. And I would say it's a really hot topic. Like a lot of people are talking about, how do I get hands-on experience? And that goes when you're breaking into to really any industry. It's that catch 22 of every job I apply for wants me to have more experience, but I can't get any experience until I get the job. Like we've all heard the story. And so a good answer to that question is, okay, you're going to have to put in a little bit of work for free. So how much? Well, the amazing thing is when you're entry level, transitioning into a new career, 1 month of experience gives you infinitely more experience than everyone else applying for the entry-level job. And you would think like, okay, 1 month has to be a stretch. Absolutely not. 1 month of experience, I would say, is what we're finding is key. If you have 2 to 3 months experience before landing your first job, we're seeing people make $15,000 to $25,000 more in that first role because they had 3 months of experience. So it makes all the difference. I would say if you have 2 weeks of experience, put it on your resume. So how do you get it? Do you volunteer with a nonprofit? Do you have to go find companies to let you volunteer? To quote Jonathan, the gatekeepers are gone. Like you don't have to play by these rules. You don't have to get the paid gig or do the apprenticeship or do the internship. That is all outdated at this point. You can literally say, I want to get Salesforce experience, for example. You can open up, they call it a Salesforce playground or a dev org. You open that up and you can build an imaginary company. Just what is the closest company to your house? Is it a gas station? Is it a pet grooming store? Conceptualize the processes of that pet grooming store and build it into your playground. What you're doing is you're polishing your own skills and feeling more confident about what you can do. And to Anita's point, now when you go to interviews and they say, can you tell me about a situation where you solved a problem? Can you explain that to me? You have a story to tell. Yeah, I was working on this project where, you know, I was doing an implementation for a pet grooming store and they had this problem. It was like this and we solved it by doing this. I could actually show you if you'd like to see it. And do you see how that makes such a huge difference in that who cares if it was a paid opportunity? Who cares if you made $1 or $100,000 or didn't make a penny? It literally does not matter. But I think societally, we've said, oh, well, nonprofit work isn't as important as for-profit work. And volunteer work is not as important as paid W-2 jobs. And it's all based on really nothing. The important thing is you have experience in the field or the area that you're trying to get work in. And when you're entry level, coming back to that, having a month of experience makes you infinitely more experienced than someone who has no experience. And I know I've went on a tangent there, but certifications, get one certification in whatever you want to do. You don't need 5, 10. I literally talked to a guy yesterday. He has 13 Salesforce certifications and he has no experience, not even volunteer project experience. And he's like, I can't get a job. And I'm like, because your resume says you have 13 certifications. When you apply for a job, they're accepting you to the interview because they're assuming an absolute superhero is about to join the call. And then you join the call, who are amazing at taking multiple choice tests and not great at actually doing the work. That's a problem. They need someone else. So get one certification. The reason you want one cert, I don't care what field you're in. What it does is it gives you a tangible. And it says, I'm serious about this profession. I'm serious about putting in the work it takes to transition in. And it lets your employer know that. It lets you know that. And now you have a certain level of confidence coming into those interviews.
This is powerful stuff, guys. I mean, this is a whole new paradigm and it's life-changing. We've seen it work on literally, you know, thousands of people have been able to transform their careers, their career trajectory, move into a completely new industry. And what's interesting is when people are coming back and saying, here are the questions I was asked in an interview, and they're passing those back and you're kind of building this portfolio of different types of questions that you would want to be able to field generally as a baseline. I would be curious, you know, to both of you, maybe you have differing perspectives on the questions are usually not as great as they could be. I mean, some people are great question askers, but an interviewer is potentially in many cases equally unskilled at that role as you are to answer them. So my thought is, again, this theme of story, you know what you can do. You know what you've built. You know what direction you would like to take a conversation. Let's talk about the soft skill of getting any random question and maybe answering that in some degree to whatever degree is justifiable, but then communicating what you really want to communicate through the power of story and experience.
Yeah. So these interviews can go in any direction. And I think interviewing is a skill of its own. And a lot of people ignore that. They walk into interviews and they go, you know, I've got some experience, so I don't really need to prepare for this. Like, I'm ready for whatever they have to ask. But it's not about that. It's not about your ability to just answer a question. To your point, Jonathan, I didn't know that when I started coaching people on interviewing and breaking in. I didn't understand the importance of storytelling and like how meaningful that was. And that sort of emerged into, it makes all the difference. And what we did is we did a study on some of our members, and we found that these are the top 20 questions for entry-level Salesforce jobs. We like noted the top 20 questions that people are going to get. And we realized you could either study for those top 20 questions and you can cross your fingers and pray that you get asked those 20 questions in your interview and you're going to be ready and you're going to sound just like a robot who scripted your answers. And that's not going to be great. Or you could prepare stories. And we found that if you prepare 2 to 3 quality stories talking about a problem that you overcame, talking about something that seemed insurmountable, but by working together with the team, you were able to find a solution. If you can put 2 to 3 of those stories together, we found that you could answer one question with one story and answer about 17 of those questions. Of those 20 questions, you could answer about 17 with one good story. And so what this does is if you typically, when you start an interview, they say something to the effect of, tell me a little bit about yourself. That is your softball. And you take that question, you tell them exactly what you want them to hear, and you guide that conversation into what you want to talk about. A lot of people walk into interviews and they're like, grill me, like ask me the questions. I hope I don't blow this. What if you walked into interviews with a different level of confidence and you said, hey, this is me. This is what I do. This is why I'm valuable to you. Just wrapped up a project implementing XYZ. It's a volunteer project. They don't know that. Just wrapped up a project doing XYZ. It was pretty awesome. So I'm coming off of that, you know, that energy. So I'd love to talk to you guys about what I can do for your business. All of a sudden, now they want to talk about the project. You've piqued their interest. And now they're not grilling you.
They just threw away all the scripted questions they have. Tell me one thing you're bad at. Tell me. They're like, well, tell me about the project. What do you do?
Right. And it makes them feel a little ridiculous to like then hear you say that and you're hyped and you're ready. And then they look back down at the piece of paper to try to figure out which boilerplate question they're going to ask. It sounds ridiculous. Now they're ready to have a conversation. And you should, like, quick tip, have a list of the things you do not want to talk about, that you are scared to talk about, you hope they don't come up. And have a list of the 3 to 5 things you hope are the only things that come up on this call. And every time you feel the conversation shifting towards something on your weakness list, try to answer in a way that guides you, like have those segue answers that can segue back over to the list you want to talk about. You know, finish those questions by saying, you know, if you hate talking about coding, because a lot of people are scared to death of coding. I am. I never did it. And so they say, how are your development skills? And you go, yeah, you know, I haven't had a ton of experience developing, but what I have done is I've worked on these really cool declarative solutions that don't use any code at all and solve like 90% of the same problems that coding do. For example, I did this, this, and this. And you're just guiding them back over to what you want to talk about. And when you can steer interviews and turn it into a conversation, they come out of there and they just interviewed 10 candidates this week. And you were the only one they had a conversation with. The other 9, it was just a grill session. It was just, here's question, here's answer, here's question, here's answer. They think of you differently. They feel differently about you. Guess who they want to invite to the next interview? It's you.
That's such a good point. You're like sparking my memory here. When I did have my initial interview, it was during the Tell Me About Yourself, where I was telling my background. And then my boss, we had that connection because he was like, oh, I used to work for a hotel too. So we just started talking about that. And it's all about how, like, I mean, you can answer all the questions. Like, if someone's interviewing like 10, 20 people, they're just going to remember how they felt during the interview more than the actual answers.
Not how the interviewee felt, not how you felt, how they felt coming out the other side.
Yes.
Well, right. I mean, we're talking about soft skills, right? Connection. How do you connect with somebody? That's a soft skill. Interviewing. Bradley, these are great little interview skills. Something buried in there, really the meta way to look at this is controlling the narrative, right? Instead of being on the defense, you're controlling the narrative of this conversation. You're proving that you're capable. Like you said, and you almost said it sheepishly, like, oh, you don't have to tell them it's volunteering. who the heck cares? You shouldn't even be on the defensive about that, right? As you said, if you have 1 month, really, if you have 1 week, 2 weeks, you have infinitely more time on job than virtually every single other person walking in for that entry-level job. So you don't need to be on the defensive. It doesn't matter if you got paid for it. Can you do the work, right? This is how you need to reframe. That's what we're talking about here. All these skills, these are important. These are essential. And I just love that we've gone through this whole gamut of what do you need to walk in there to be successful?
There's so much here, guys. I mean, the certification process, the personal branding process, the volunteer experience, the job search, the interview prep. When we started, you know, this conversation is around an hour right now. When we started, this idea of soft skills was kind of vague, right? Like, it's kind of like tech skills plus soft skills. And someone said, oh, soft skills. Oh, great. Okay. Well, maybe I will go to college, right? But now we've broken down to like five components and then given you the nuance that you got to be able to express. And did you hear how story was just weaved into all of that? It's at a point now where almost for a challenge, right? Like, and Anita would probably say yes, this Bradley would say yes, this I would raise my hand. I bet you starting from scratch, pick most niches in the certification space, we could get a job with no actual volunteer or paid experience, but just self-assigned learning with story-based actions that we're taking. So Bradley, it's a little unfair maybe to put this on you, but assuming like you have no GED, you have no college degree, you have your one certification and you have no experience other than anything you're allowed to do you on your own. You know, you can build it on your own. Could you get an employer to give you a chance based on that?
1,000%. Like, no question. There is no gray space. Absolutely. You could absolutely land jobs with self-led learning, assigning yourself experience. Absolutely.
Anita, would you be as confident?
Yes, we've seen it happen.
Okay. All right. Do people get that? This is the power. You got to pair these two together. Self-led learning is great, but it means nothing if you don't have the confidence to tell a story around it, right? I hope you hear that. That is absolutely core to what we're trying to get across. So soft skills are immersing yourself in the community to get the certification, personal branding, the volunteer experience, but the word volunteer can go away. Experience can be paid, it can be volunteer, or it can be self-led learning, the job search, knowing that the hidden job market exists, and then knowing how to crush the interview by leading the conversation with the story that you have put together. This is the core of what this paradigm is. And it is worth understanding that is worth more than a $100,000 degree. You just need to hear me though that. It is worth more than a $100,000 degree. So in that context, a $100,000 college degree fueled by student loan debt is your biggest financial mistake. And if you're mid-career, hating your career, and you want to redo, it's an obvious choice to just do this instead, embrace this paradigm. And Brad, I know, like, I've been so angry about this for so long and I've never gotten less angry. I only get more angry because it's an evident truth. It's a natural truth that has been hidden from us for the last 50 years.
Yeah. I mean, I think for all of the Jonathan soapboxes over the last 5 years, this is number one, and for good reason, right? It's very personal for you because you took that standard path and you got into $168,000 worth of student loan debt and you had to dig your way out of that. So I get the passion and it comes through and it's really, really important. And I think it's interesting that you brought up Frank before, and we've talked about personal branding. So Frank Vasquez, who was on our show episode 194, and then again in episode 313, he has become an expert in our Choosify Facebook group, right? And as you said, he's answered thousands, probably tens of thousands of questions at this point. He is a leading expert in that community. Right. And Bradley talked about community before. And what's so interesting about Anita and Bradley and what you guys have done is you have taken these soft skills, you've taken the community, all the things we talk about, and then personal branding. Right. Frank wound up turning and starting a podcast called Risk Parity Radio, which is fantastic. And he took his expertise and he's trying to scale that. And that's what I see you guys doing just in the last 2 months. You together started a podcast called Salesforce for Everyone. And I've listened to every single episode. I have nothing to do with it. I'm not going to get a Salesforce career anytime soon. But it's a genuinely good podcast. And I've had the question of, okay, I hear this Salesforce. I've heard Bradley now for 4 years talking about this. What the heck is it? I have no idea. But in the first 9 episodes I've listened to, I actually understand now and can explain it to people, which is really, really cool. And again, the personal branding, you guys have these voices, you're experts, and you're becoming voices for the community. And I love that. I'd love to hear a little bit of the origin story of the podcast, if you don't mind.
Yeah, for sure. So number one, thanks for listening.
It's glad genuinely someone... good, like legitimately a good podcast.
If you're enjoying the podcast, please 5 stars.
5 stars only.
Well, and we'll start with subscribing. So it's called Salesforce for Everyone. And if you've heard Bradley and Anita over the years, definitely check it out. So anyway, Bradley, over to you.
Yeah. So the origin story, I think, is that, you know, we started Talent Stacker as a concept and really helping people in a more formal way about 18 months ago. But to the point of the whole conversation we've had, we've been talking about Salesforce and trying to be evangelists for this pathway for a solid 5 years now, you know, probably more. But, you know, 5 years ago is when we really made the connection with you guys. And I think we always knew that podcasting was a different type of community. It's a different type of relationship that you get to have. And I say that specifically, you get to have with your audience that you don't get to have in other ways. Like, this is sitting in the car and commutes. This is while they're at work working with their earbuds in. Like, this is a different relationship we get to have with these individuals through a podcast. So I think we always knew we wanted one, but it was, do we have the right things to say? Do we have the right information and expertise to back it? Are we ready to carry a conversation for 30 to 40 minutes and really nail these topics? Because if we're going to do it, let's do it right. And we had, you know, a lot of help and a lot of experts behind the scenes. But, you know, episodes 1 through 8, our absolute mission was help someone who has never heard of Salesforce before understand why this industry is so in demand, why it's so special, and how you can literally listen to those first 8 episodes and you'll know exactly what to do to land a job. So it's amazing. And I'm really thankful for Anita being willing to, you know, the moment I asked her, like, hey, I can't do this by myself, we've got to co-host this thing together. And she was like, 100%. So yeah.
100%, but definitely out of my comfort zone. But what Bradley was saying about relationship to podcasts, like, I think that is like the biggest point I want to make with the podcast. Cause like normally when I ask people like, hey, you should think about switching careers, they think I'm like, they don't know what Salesforce is. They think I'm trying to get them to sign up for an MLM. And honestly, if I hadn't
Tupperware,
heard
anybody, Tupperware, come on.
If I hadn't heard about like this career on this show, I probably would have thought the same. But it's something about, you know, listening to a podcast, it's like you're getting advice from a friend. So I think that's the best part of it.
Right. So we're not describing, one, a scam, right? So the whole too good to be true, which is, all right. Number two, we're not describing an MLM, you know, Tupperware party. So we don't want you to go out and try and recruit all your friends and get them to, you know, whatever, whatever. You just replace your buying that you were doing on Amazon. Okay. So that's it. And then number three, nobody's trying to convince you to learn to code, right? So three things, not a scam, not an MLM, and no need to code. That's like the baseline. Now, from there, I just want to point out that over 300 people just from the Choose FI community alone, have made that transition into a new career path. And I want to play 30 seconds from your latest episode, because Anita, you are probably the first Choose FI listener to join Bradley and publicly say, I'm making this transition. And then you got those results. And we haven't had anybody talk about it since, but that doesn't change the fact that well over 300 people have made that transition from the financial independence community. And Brad, as you pointed out, Brad gets emails literally all the time. I know Dennison was on the show. Sorry, Dennison. Yep, absolutely. Let me add that one. So now what I want to point out, this trailer from episode 9, which is going out soon, I want to just play 30 seconds of it, because this is Heather. She's a Choose a Fire and she is crushing it. I want to play it. And then I want to give you guys a chance just to react to her story and invite people to hear a little bit more. So give me just a second. I'm going to pull this up.
I finally took action. I wish I had done it, you know, in the beginning, but that's okay. In 3.5 months, I got a new job, 100% remote. I more than doubled my income, and I have since moved from New Jersey, doing a little geo arbitrage.
Hi.
All right. Hi, is Anita, and she has a lot of really wonderful things to say, and you can hear all about that episode by checking out the Salesforce for Everyone podcast. But before I do that, Anita, tell us a little bit about Heather and why her story was just so remarkable.
Oh, man. Like, I mean, because she actually did consider tech prior, but it didn't work out. And then this was like her second shot into the tech industry, and she just killed it. The fact that she was able to like double her salary, move to somewhere a low cost of living, like if I was in her same situation, single, I'd be like gone. I'd probably be in Portugal and she arbitraging. But like, it's amazing to watch her go through the program, like change her life completely. And like, she just like bought a house recently too. So it's just amazing watching her story unfold.
Yeah, to me, Heather just embodies what financial independence is. And it's, you know, understanding that she's been on this path to spend less and save more for years. And it just seems insurmountable to get to financial independence by, you know, spending less and saving more. But now she has doubled her income. It's incredible. So now she sort of switched the formula and it's make more, save more instead of spend less, save more. And we even talked to her on the show a little bit about, are you spending less money or the same amount of money as before? And she's like, you know what? I'm spending more money than I was before, but I'm saving more money than I was before. And my path to financial independence has been completely shortcut. And, you know, it's these amazing stories of geo arbitrage. She's house hacking now. You know, she just closed on her new house. And this is all because she was willing to say, you know what? I don't see the vision with where my current career is going. I may as well take some very small calculated risk to see if transitioning could be the way to go. And she did it and she killed it. And I just think, again, it embodies what we learn about and we talk about hypothetically, you know, in the financial independence communities. And she just put it all into action.
All right, everyone. I hope you're excited about that little trailer and I hope you'll follow up and just give it a shot. You know, Salesforce has this cool culture called the Ohana where everybody gives back. It's very reminiscent of what we see in the financial independence community, which is why I think you see kind of this merging in some cases. But like, I am celebrating Heather's journey from this side of the podcast. I am so excited to see what she has accomplished and so excited to see that episode come together. We put together a short link just to make it very easy. Just check, you know, you're listening to a podcast, check out the Salesforce for Everyone podcast. And just for your total convenience, for those of you that prefer links, you can go to choosefi.com/S as in Salesforce, F as in four, E as in everyone. choosefi.com/SFE, right? And you can access all the links from that direct page. Man, I could probably tighten that up. choosefi.com/SFE. Check it out. You won't regret it. And keep in mind this paradigm, you know, as you're calculating what moves you want to make, as you're calculating negotiating a raise in your current industry, as you're calculating whether you should, you know, go with what was called the ostrich strategy, where you just stick your head in the sand and try and grind it out in an industry you can't stand for the next 10 years because you were making 100K and you don't think it'd be possible for you to do that anywhere else. You're kidding yourself. Well, you're not kidding yourself. You're fooling yourself. It is absolutely possible to pivot in a faster time than you even think possible. And I really think just listening to a couple episodes of this podcast or sharing the Salesforce for Everyone podcast with a friend or family member that you can see the pain on their face every time they check in on Monday morning, I think you'd be doing them a favor.
Yeah, agreed. And Anita, Bradley, thank you guys so much for coming back on the show. Congrats on starting the new podcast. It's amazing to see where you've both come, right? In just the number of years that I've known both of you. So yeah, this is really, really cool. And yeah, again, congrats. And you have a listener in me. That's for darn sure.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us on. Obviously, it is our privilege. We, you know, couldn't feel more support from the Choosefi community. So yeah, we appreciate it.
Yeah, it's amazing. Thank you.
All right, my friends, the fire is spreading. We'll see you next time as we continue to go down the road less traveled.